Sessionable.
Welcome, everyone, to Sessionable. Another general ep for you guys, just to catch up with some news. First, before we start talking about news items, what are we drinking?
Well, who brought this beer?
I think we all did, didn't we?
I didn't.
I think me and Brad brought the same beer without consulting.
Great minds think alike.
Yeah.
It's a beer that that Tom recommended in the two episodes ago, and it's the Four Pines In Season IPA.
Straight out of tinnies.
In cans.
Yeah. Yes.
Which just came out last week, I think.
Very exciting.
Well, this last week as of recording.
Yeah. The second, they came out last season as well, didn't it?
Did they can it last year?
I think it's the first time they canned it.
Yeah.
And this is the renamed one. It's not fresh in season anymore. It's just in season.
It's in season IPA number 4, I think it's called. Yeah. And
it's meant to be like a new hop allotment or something like that. Was that what it was last year?
Yeah, it's not really like, it's very vaguely fresh in season, but like, it's just whatever they can get their hands on, they brew it with.
It's a clever way of doing it, right? It's a clever way of saying, look, we're going to get you the freshest hops we can at the time. We're not going to commit to having a particular recipe every time. We're just going to try and brew with whatever is available, and I think it's a good way of doing it.
Yeah, so these cans were canned on the 27th of April, and we're recording this on the 13th of May.
It's pretty fresh.
And you can go to, and we'll put this in the show notes, fourpinesbeer.com.au/in-season-IPA, and it'll tell you what hops are in it.
Oh, okay. Sweet. Cool.
Yeah. Has anyone done that?
No.
I haven't, yeah. I don't read the can stuff.
Yeah.
I'm more worried about what's in the can, and it tastes good.
Yeah. It's tasting bloody dank.
Yeah, I think it's awesome they put a canning date on the can. I think that's that's awesome.
We did discuss that with the beer dates thing,
And it says freshness, enjoy before 6 months, which is a long time.
I mean, 6 months is, it seems short, but like Bolter until recently used to be 3 months for their XPA. I think Fixation are still 3 months.
I think Fixation just moved to 6 as well.
Okay, they're 6 months now as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I know Wayward is 4 months.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
I do like a green can as well. I like the green.
It does give you a bit of a mental indication of what's going to be inside.
It is. And when, Liam, you were pouring it, I think because of the reflection of the can in the glass, the head looked green to me. And I was like, oh, yeah.
That's what you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what do we think?
I'm really digging it.
Is this the one that certain people on the internet were saying was too... Too hoppy, too piney.
Yeah, someone
and
poured
people
it out. It was
put those photos of people pouring it down the sink because they thought there was something wrong with it.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's definitely pine forward, but it's not like...
It's not the piniest beer.
It's pretty piney, but like it's...
Yeah.
I guess we're pretty used to hops, so...
Yeah, we've already had our lupulin threshold shift. So.
I do think it tastes a bit more full on in the can than it did on draft.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
But not in any sort of way that would put me off.
No. Yeah.
No, I'm really digging it.
Speaking of stuff that we talked about the last time we were all together, how about those Wicked Weed and Lagunitas guys? Hey?
Is it the Sessionable Curse? Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So
the two breweries that I mentioned last time that we talked about it, or was that 3 episodes ago, both in the last week got announced as being either Ultramore taken over or taken over.
Yeah. So Wicked Weed, who you sung the praises of.
And brought in a bottle, didn't
they? Yeah. It was tasting good.
Yeah.
They got acquired by AB InBev.
Yeah.
It wasn't you that bought them then, Liam. You didn't go out to the US and buy them.
Yeah, no, I just bought all the barrels. Yeah.
And Lagunitas.
It's my pseudonym, AB and InBev. Yeah.
And Lagunitas, who were already 50% owned by Heineken, are now 100% owned by Heineken.
Yeah. Well, before they were, I think, 49%. So they weren't even majority.
I thought it was 50. I think we said 60-40 or something on the episode, but I'm pretty sure it was 50.
Yeah, I think it was 50.
I thought it was just
the articles
below,
that I've read said 50.
Yeah. 50?
So these are two quite different scenarios then, right? You've got one independent brewery that's built up a pretty good following locally, was looking at pushing out further afield, and now we know...
Yeah.
You know, perhaps where that investment was coming from in order to step up their barrel program that you were talking about in the last episode, Liam. And then we've got someone else who, another big company who were already half owned by a major multinational and have now gone fully owned. So I think those are two quite different scenarios.
Well, in a way, yes. But in a way, that it's all about just about distribution and help with that. I think with Wicked Weed, like, you know, when I was there, I don't think anyone really saw that coming, but it kind of makes sense when you're just about to launch or open this new barrel program. Yeah, it's be the second largest in the country.
That's right, you were saying second largest. Yeah.
And then the next thing you got to go is like, all right, well, how do we actually move all this beer? And that's where someone like AB InBev can come in. And I think with Lagunitas, it's they're very open about the fact they want to just take over the world at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
The initial partnership with Heineken was to get distribution into places like Mexico and other places like that. Yeah. So I think, you know, and part of this whole thing is, you know, we talked about a few, three or four episodes ago about the fact that Lagunitas said they want to come to Australia, and when everyone asked them how that was going to happen, they didn't really have an answer. Maybe they couldn't tell us because this was in the works, or maybe this is what that answer is going to be. So yeah, in a way they're similar, but in a way they're not. But I guess out of the two of them, I think Wicked Weed has copped the most flack.
Yeah, they got a lot of backlash about their decision. I mean, I didn't call it though.
I didn't say that everyone's going to be either seeing stock or talking about Wicked Weed.
You were right.
Sooner than I thought it would.
Yeah, very soon.
You were more right than you thought you would be.
The craft beer Nostradamus.
Going back to what I was originally alluding to, though, if a company is half sold out, for want of a better word, to the big boys, is it seen by the, you know, by people as less of a loss that they go fully owned?
Yeah, maybe.
But I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they did sell the half.
Yeah,
that's
it was
the
like
thing.
What, it was a couple of years ago.
It was
something.
Not even, isn't it? It was like a year or two ago. So it's just kind of a slower thing. I think the big reactions were when the first 50% went, and the second 50%. I think a lot of people maybe saw that as being inevitable,
not as a surprise,
kind of
that
already being a done deal. When it was announced, it was less of a shock.
I think Wicked Weed, they felt it a bit more as well, because they were had the Funkatorium Invitational coming up in, I think, June, and pretty much half the brewers that they invited pulled out of that festival, and they've had to postpone it until August, September, to kind of structure the festival.
Is it fair to say that Lagunitas were bigger in terms of their distribution footprint at the point they got out?
100%.
Yes. I mean, they were already huge before they were bought out.
I think it's we've spoken endlessly about this topic of big beer buyouts. I read a really interesting article on the heels of the both announcements. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Creature Comforts Brewery, the owner and brewer from there, and he brought up an interesting point that I kind of didn't realize, and I think we've spoken about. AB InBev are now basically using their craft breweries to constrain supply of certain ingredients.
That came out later, I think, earlier in this week as well. Yeah.
So there's a big allotment of hops that basically have only been allotted to what AB InBev is calling their high-end brands, which are their craft beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not something we've really... it's not something I ever thought about as a thing.
I don't think we have seen it quite to that level over here.
Yeah.
So I know one of the first reaction things I read about from Wicked Weed was actually from Jester King, and it was them pulling out of the Funkatorium Invitational. But that actually was quite well written, the way they did it. And they basically said, look, these guys are still our mates, we still have to hang out with them, but due to the practices of AB InBev, we can't be involved. And they did talk about a lot of these constraints that AB InBev is putting on the rest of the industry. And that was then made pretty clear with, I think what you're talking about, Tom, is the South African hops.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And there was a lot of breweries in the States were starting to have a play with those, because it was, you know, something a bit new and different. And that was owned by AB InBev, or a division of AB InBev, that hop production. And then they've now ceased all sales to that to anyone outside of AB InBev. And that's one example, and it's a pretty badly timed example for Wicked Weed, because up until that point, everyone sort of said these are the practices, but no one, I hadn't heard any of a particular reference to
Do you think this is more these multinationals looking after their own interests, or do you actually think it's active sabotage trying to stop the little guys from getting the ingredients they need?
I'm not sure if it's active sabotage, but like,
it's giving yourself a competitive advantage, and if you own the hop farms, why would you sell it to your competition?
But doesn't that go against the whole craft beer philosophy, right? Of, you know, helping each other out and
this is the thing,
big friendly community.
I bet you those breweries that those hops have been allotted to, some of them probably don't even have a plan to use them.
Yeah.
And they would be more than happy to pass them on to their mates in other breweries, you know. And it just puts you in that awkward situation where, you know, you might hang out with a guy who works in another brewery and you and him are good mates, but then his business is owned by AB InBev and yours is an independent, and then it's going to make things pretty difficult. So
yeah.
The other thing I was going to say was AB InBev did openly say that this was a strategic acquisition because they wanted to add a quality sour brewery to their portfolio, and they didn't really have one yet. I mean, I guess Goose Island.
Yeah, I was going
Well, I mean, I think Liquor Weed's most popular beer is their IPA, which is, like, they do mainstream beers as well. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see if that's something that they kill off or not, because I think the most popular beer, like I said, is their IPA, which is just cracking as well. But
And then it would be, it's always interesting when you see the output of the brewery basically taking part of a larger portfolio. And I think we've seen this in Australia with Little Creatures.
Yeah.
Not all of the Little Creatures beers exist anymore because they didn't really fit within the larger Lion Nathan craft portfolio.
But then you look at stuff like White Rabbit, and they've basically got free reign to do whatever they want.
And credit to them.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I think it was the first time I got to see a lot of their stuff was at that Canberra Beer Festival, and they had that's
some
pretty cool stuff. The Teddy Winker and
They had a chocolate stout on at the Forest Lodge Hotel recently that was actually really tasty. There was, you know, that White Rabbit have been allowed to do some interesting stuff, and that's, you know, that's awesome. But yeah, I do, the more that this happens, and the more it's going to happen, it's going to just keep on happening, right? The big guys are going to make
it
strategic acquisitions.
It does definitely come in waves, though, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, and I think we're in the middle of a wave at the moment. There was an interesting take, the article that I mentioned earlier, the Creature Comforts one, and it basically talked about how for these large companies, it was a bit conspiracy theorist-ish, but it was well written and well reasoned. They're buying these brands, these breweries, basically to help them sell more of their other brands and to kind of up their portfolio and change the perception of craft beer and stuff. And how true that is up for debate. But it was a really interesting article.
Sorry, can you explain that? They buy these breweries to help them sell more of their other brands.
Basically,
what do you mean
by what they do is that they, by buying these breweries, they can then push down the price, which then puts price pressure on other craft breweries, and it makes craft beer seem less expensive and less premium, which helps kind of the brand image of their mainstream brands.
So how does that work in something like Wicked Weed or the Funkatorium side of Wicked Weed, where there's stock in barrels that's going to be in barrels for quite some time? The price of to produce any of those beers in those barrels,
Of course. But it's not an instant thing. It's a long play though, right?
But it's going to be. It's also like those styles of beers. It's going to be 5-6 years before you can even start to.
Yeah, that's no time at all.
It's not just that though. Like they own Wicked Weed. Yeah, that they take a while to brew these beers, but they also own all these other breweries that take a short time to brew these beers, so they can spread the costs between the different breweries so that they can make some really crazy sours really affordable.
I'm just really struggling with that concept of
I'll link the article in the show
buying notes. a craft beer brewery then has a halo effect on your non-craft brands. I just don't see how that would be the case.
It's not that it in itself has a halo effect, but what they're doing is they're buying these craft breweries to change the perception of craft beer.
That I understand, yeah.
And that helps the brand, their existing mainstream brands.
That's the leap I'm struggling to make.
I'm not
saying I subscribe to this theory. I just thought it was the article is well-reasoned, and it's a really interesting read. I can't remember the name of the guy, but it was someone from, I'm pretty sure, Creature Comforts Brewery.
I think it's just another way of getting exclusivity in a venue by having a bigger portfolio.
We are seeing that in Australia
big time. It's worrying.
Venues no longer need to have independent taps. They can have a Lion Nathan contract and fill most areas of what you'd want in a tap list.
Well, that's an interesting point in itself. How many venues have we seen go in that way where they were independent and now they're solely not Lion Nathan? Haven't we seen the Lion Nathan? Theodore Lux is a big, you know, fair enough, they've taken full contract with Lion
VB and their own
brewery. But I know Beer Lux in Fed Square in Melbourne are given the autonomy to do whatever they want. Where other venues in the Beer Lux brand, I'm not too sure about.
Well, I know Sydney is not, basically. And that's Dixon Hospitality wide.
Yeah, that's a good example. But in general, I think it's more pubs that have never had any sort of craft.
But taps, three or four years ago, when Lion Nathan didn't own this many brands, it was a much better value proposition to say, okay, we don't need that contract anymore because I can't get a good stout. I can't get a good IPA. I can't get that if I'm staying with Lion Nathan. Now they can.
Well, I agree in theory, but I've yet to see a venue that's like a full Lion thing that has White Rabbit on, that has Little Creatures on, and actually uses a full flex of that. I don't know, have you guys seen one? I guess, I don't know if you want to call it a faux craft or a Lion craft, where that they fall within a Lion contract but do all the more extreme stuff in the Lion portfolio.
Well, I wouldn't have thought they'd be allowed to, would they? They would have had to carry the big friends.
No, but
too,
I'm saying,
right?
to give them a spread.
Yeah, I mean, like, if they are fully Lion, they'll have, you know, Tui's new and Tui's old,
I think,
and whatever.
Yeah. It's more dictated by the number of Lions in the pub, right? So if they've got 12 taps that are all, you know, and they're solely contracted to Lion, then they'll have 12 different Lion beers on, right?
Mm.
But most pubs don't have that many different taps.
Yeah, no, I think, but it also means, so if they've got, say, the new Little Creatures Hobby Red,
yeah,
right, then that's a craft type beer that is no longer an independent tap.
Yep.
Right? And that's kind of what I'm talking about. So, you know, it might not be 100% of the taps, but say it goes from 50 to then 60%, or just by adding that beer every so often, and then it's the thing is for us and for the craft breweries that we know, it's all about short-term stuff. But for those big companies, it's not. It's they're playing long games that they have the money and the patience to do that we kind of don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I think...
I'm getting a little bit tinfoil hat.
No, I agree.
I guess I'm not seeing much evidence of that from what I've seen.
Yeah,
so,
that's the
but
thing.
Then again, I go to a particular set of venues, so I'm not necessarily going to see that. So.
Yeah.
We're in a bubble, right? The other thing as well is I think for CUB and Lion at the moment, tap contracts aren't really working for them. They're probably losing more venues than they're gaining by having these contracts. So I think in the next couple of years, they're going to have to really reconsider how their tap contracts works, and that either goes to an extreme one way or the other, but this where it currently sits.
But even
I don't think it's working for it.
But even then, like, even if it's not a tap contract, like if that pub decides to have one of their free taps with a White Rabbit beer or a Lion Nathan or a Little Creatures beer, then that is one less tap for a craft brewery, for an actual independent craft brewery to use. Should we move on to the next item?
Yeah, just before we do, can I just say how addictive this in-season IPA is?
Brad went and opened another can.
Just cracked another tinny it goes down really nicely. Yeah.
It is pretty good. I can definitely see how this could be confronting beer for some people, though.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, who's going to buy out Four Pints?
hasn't that ship sailed now? There was rumors.
There's been rumors for a long time, but also, like, they seem pretty staunch.
But don't they all?
But, like, we've mentioned them now, so
the curse.
Yeah, the curse has to continue.
Well, that's a good point, actually. The curse of Sessionable. When did this all start? The curse of Sessionable?
Because like, 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
I was looking through some old episodes recently. Oh, by the way, if you've noticed some weird stuff with the podcast feed recently. We've changed hosts, so you might have some old episodes coming up in your feed.
I think I had 75 new episodes.
There's kind of nothing we can do about it, unfortunately.
Sessionable.net is currently down, but it should be back soon.
Yep.
So, yeah, I've been looking through some old show notes, and there are a bunch of stuff. Like, you know, we were adamant Riverside fans from episode one, and
some of us more than others.
You know, Dave Patton moved on, you know, eventually. I just saw a lot of references that, you know, especially like when I was copying links that were no longer working.
Yeah, right.
To venues and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's just the rising tide of.
And it is, but there, like, right? it's also like as human minds, we like to think of patterns where patterns don't exist. And the Sessionable curse is one of those things. So
yeah, so it probably goes back to what Mountain Goat when we had, you know, we had Mountain Goat a couple of our live episodes.
The first live episode we had Mountain Goat, and then it was after that one they got. Well, it was just before the second live episode they got bought.
They
right?
got bought, okay. Yeah. And then we had Colonial, and literally the following week, Justin.
Yeah, before the Justin episode kind of came out.
The brewery. Yeah.
That was all signed and sealed before he sat down to do that podcast, to be honest with you.
Keep an eye out on who our guests will be at the live episode later this year.
I don't think it's anything to do with the curse. It's just we're talking about current things.
Yeah, it's a very volatile industry.
It's
so.
A sign of a.
I'm going to say the Wicked Weed one did take me back.
That was funny. It was funny that it was both Lagunitas and Wicked Weed. Yeah. We talked about both in the same episode.
Yeah,
it was great.
Brilliant. It's a sign of an exciting, evolving industry that we're interested in, right?
So yeah.
If it all stayed the same over the course of the however many years, 4 years that you've been doing this podcast, then it would all be very boring and we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
No, yeah, exactly.
We can have like a Sessionable Curse watch every few episodes. See how it's going.
Yeah.
Liam, so...
What have you been up to, Liam?
Yeah, speaking of breweries we mentioned in the last episode, we were all together. You went to the Goose Island launch dinner?
Yeah, I did actually. For Beer Week, I got invited to a dinner and it was actually a really cool dinner. But it was in Marrickville and has anyone heard of a chef called Jared Ingersoll?
Yeah, yeah. He used to run Dang Street that
day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought I recognised the name.
So it's his new place in Marrickville called We Are Howard. And it's a very interesting place where it's pretty much just a rooftop apartment. An apartment building in Marrickville.
Yeah.
But the actual dinner was like on the roof, like up, like out on the skyline. But it was cool. So it was an invitation thing and there was a lot of the beer media was there. So, you know, like guys like Nick from Crafty Pint, Luke from Ale of Time.
Brews News.
Yeah.
James
from Brews News, MC from Froth. And there was a lot of the foodie. So it was there. They called it the launch of Goose Island.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, an industry sort of a thing, more of a media sort of a thing. But I don't know, Midway had been on sale before that.
So yeah, for like a month or so.
Yeah. But it was a really nice dinner and it was all paired, four courses, all paired with Goose Island beers. And they'd shipped over some beers as well. So the only beer on tap they had was the Midway.
Yeah. Mm.
It was the first time I properly got to try it, and
yeah, what did you think?
I like the malt bill because it does have that Goose Island malt bill, but it kind of feels like a Goose Island IPA that didn't quite get right
and
changed it a little bit.
It's
all right. Yeah, it wasn't my favorite. We started with they had bottles of the Sophie, which is a saison, which is beautiful. Really nice. And I was a little bit upset because we only got like a half a glass each, and I pretty much scolded and said, like, "Can I have some more?" I was like, "Nah,
some more.
You can have a pint of Midway." I'm like, oh, "Okay, sweet." but yeah, that was a great beer. So they had the, I believe it was the head of the barrel program, head brewer for the barrel program was there.
Yeah,
nice. And it's flown over like a few of them, so it's a big thing. They had another lady, it was an author, I forget her name now because I actually own one of her books, and yeah, she works for the company now, and she was sort of like the dinner host, I guess, and she does explaining more of the pairings and the food style.
Yeah, cool.
So we had the Sophie, we had the Midway, we had the Goose Island IPA, and they finished on another one of the barrel sours, which is like a raspberry sour.
Yeah, nice.
How was that?
Really good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interestingly though, the Goose Island IPA was borderline on the expiry date. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting.
Like, so they say 180 days on the bottle, best consumed within 180 days, and it was brewed in January.
Wow.
Oh, so you had a look at the bottle.
Oh, yeah, because they gave
the bottle. Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I think it was a bottle between two or something.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So I thought that was a bit, if you're going to do that, you could have got some fresher stock. And it was tasting fine, but I thought, that's just me being pedantic.
It's interesting, that they wouldn't have made sure of that, but hey. You know.
But I think they've had some stock around for a little while for some sampling and stuff like that. Yeah. So I don't know. But yeah. But overall, it was a great dinner. It was really cool.
Yeah, very nice.
How was the food? Was it?
The food was awesome, actually. He's a very meat-focused chef, because I don't get some pop-ups where he's
I've had his food before, and he's pretty good.
But yeah, really, it was awesome. Really well done. Very, very smickly executed, I must say. And there was a lot of them there. And I think they've flown a few of the media from interstate for it as well.
Can you guys see yourself drinking much Goose Island in the year or two
to come? If that barrel stuff comes to Australia a bit more.
If it's well done, like if it's better than, like I said, I didn't really like the Midway. If it's better than that, you know, if it's the quality that the IPA is and if the sours come in more often at a reasonable price, yeah.
So it throws a bit of a spanner in the works and what we were talking about last time with Goose Island, but in which direction they're going to go with, because we've gone from one that's Midway brewed here to some pretty high-end stuff for a launch And so I still don't really know how they're going to approach the Australian market. I mean, but
I think they'll work. I mean, it's clear to say
that they definitely have some great beers in their arsenal. Yeah. So it's still a matter of what we're going to get out here and what consistency and what volumes, I guess. Yeah. But yeah. But overall, it was a very well executed launch of a brand.
It's good to hear. Interesting to see how much tap real estate they get.
Yeah.
That's going to be the key thing, I think.
Moving on to some local news. Bright Brewery are doing a dark beer event. So they're doing their first ever Darker Days Festival on the 1st of July.
I haven't heard much about this, so tell me about it.
So it's their midwinter festival, and they're going to have all dark beers only available on the day. And they're doing two dark beers themselves. I believe it's the Stubborn Russian that they release every year around this time of year, and their Black Diamond Black IPA.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that one before.
This is interesting. Has there been anything like this in Australia previously? Because this is the sort of thing you see fairly regularly in the UK, right?
Mona does the Dark Winter Mofo Festival, but that's not
a festival. You kind of see tap takeovers of dark beers, like Bitterfew and Royal Albert in Sydney do it, and I'm sure a few places in Melbourne do it as well.
For Beer Week every year.
Yeah, but there's not really any kind of festival.
Yeah.
This is a good sign, though. This is a sign of an evolving
We've never seen festivals for particular styles of beer.
Yeah. So for this one, they're kind of starting off a bit small. Like, they're not going to do like a massive festival. They're just kind of having it at the brewery and having their dark beers, and they've invited a few different breweries from the area to kind of brew a dark beer for it as well.
That's good.
And Bright's has anyone been to Bright Brewery before?
No, and I'd like to go this year. I'm not sure if I'll make it, but
it's successful. Nice place. So, yeah.
And I think the Victorian climate really does lend itself to, you know, a winter dark beer festival as well.
I think they get a bit of a high season during winter because where they are with the snow fields, I think, as well.
Yeah.
All right.
But
okay.
But it's a beautiful brewery, and it's like the backs onto this nice grass layer and this little river and stuff like that behind it.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
It's a good spot for a bit of a festival.
I really want to go now. Did you say 1st of July?
1st of July, damn. Yeah. So I was looking at how long it takes to get there, and it's like a 6.5 hour straight drive from Sydney, or like a 3.5 hour drive from Melbourne.
Yeah.
Or if you fly there, it's like a 1 hour drive from Albury Airport.
Yeah, so, okay.
But you could make a weekend out of it and go to Bridge Road.
I reckon it'd be fun.
Brighton Beach Road's pretty close.
Yeah. It'd be really cold.
I went to Bright last year on the way to driving to Gabs in Melbourne, and we stopped in.
Yeah, cool.
Because Bridge Road was closed, so we went to Bright. We missed Bridge Road about half an hour or something. We're staying at Beechworth, we went to Bright and had lunch there.
Yeah,
it was
awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah,
speaking of Gabs and Good Beer Week, Gabs and Good Beer Week in Melbourne probably would have finished by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah, but I think the Gabs in Sydney will be this weekend, right?
Yeah. But are any of you guys going down for that?
Yeah, I'll be in Melbourne.
Yeah, cool. Any highlights that you're looking forward to or that you have already enjoyed?
I'm looking forward to trying all 10 plus New England IPAs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that are on at Gabs.
It's a black IPA this year, isn't it?
Actually, let's talk about that that kind of tweet that our friend Morgan...
Friend of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show Morgan has put on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah. This was a great tweet, by the way. I was
to give some background, Morgan does the app.
The iOS app.
Yeah. So his tweet said, if you drank a sample of every festival beer at Gabs, you would consume the equivalent of 70 standard drinks.
Which is a lot.
It's particularly pertinent for Sydney because
there's only two sessions.
There's only a 1 day festival in Sydney this year, two sessions.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are probably going to want to drink a broad sample of what's available at Gabs. And, you know, seeing that 70 standard drinks is a bit of a concern. And it's probably enough of a concern for me to think twice about, do I actually want to be around at the end of the second session?
Yeah. I mean, like last year, there were a lot of fairly low alcohol beers, but this year it's just gone the opposite direction.
I know previous years they've actually really pushed that lower alcohol beers.
Yeah. And 70 standard drinks, even if you go to all seven sessions between Sydney and Melbourne, you're still drinking 10 standard drinks per session, 20 standard drinks a day, essentially. That's
a Tuesday.
Saturday, right?
Yeah.
I've been training for this. This is why I drink 20 standard drinks a day every day.
It's fine for us alcoholics.
Yeah,
but,
I know. That's high functioning. Well, that's debatable.
I don't know if it was Morgan's tweet or the reply to it, something about how that was equivalent to a bottle of vodka. Was that right?
Two bottles I saw.
Two bottles of vodka. Wow.
I think, and then I did also see, I think it was a reply from Sam or Jez Fletcher, one of them, who was like, yeah, but that's over a certain amount of hours, which only ends up being 3 standard drinks an hour, which is basically, you know, staying sober, right?
No.
You can still drive, right?
No.
It's interesting. I mean, there's ethical, you know, things to think about as well. You know, is it ethical to hold a festival one day?
No, it is. It's perfectly fine. It's just don't be a muppet and think you have to drink all of them.
Yeah, but there will be people. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, anyone with half an ounce of sense will do that. But I guarantee you there'll be people who will go to Gab Sydney who will think, I'm going to drink everything on the menu.
But, you know, but I mean...
You know what? I reckon there should be another study. Is if you lined up to get every single beer, could you get every single beer
in 2 days? I don't think you
probably
could.
Probably not
in
with
one,
the
queues. And
I reckon, yeah, 1 day, 2 sessions.
I reckon at the same time, like, there are going to be, you know, they do employ RSA officers specifically for these festivals. So if people do start getting really drunk because they're halfway through the 180 beers, they will get kicked out. Not that people get kicked out of Gabs very often. Cause
I've never seen an RSA official.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I have personally cut quite a few people off at Gabs. Okay. And then,
But like, it's a generally well-behaved festival, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And hopefully it remains that.
Yeah.
So
it's always a danger out of the last half an hour, 45 minutes, when people just start panicking that
I've not had that, yeah.
It is an interesting combination, especially for Sydney, where they have increased the beer list from 120 to 180, and they were forced to reduce it to one day.
I think 180 includes ciders as well, though.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, cool.
So, we've got a few other little bits of news. Boat Rocker merging with Hippocampus Distillery to form Boat Rocker Brewers and Distillers.
Mm.
So, Hippocampus are a small craft distillery originally from Perth. I think they're moving to Melbourne as part of this merger.
They'd already had purchased part of Boat Rocker previous to this.
But this is... They're officially merging to become one company.
Interesting, because I think... Yeah, I think they've had some previous stuff with Hippocampus, so it's sort of a merger of the two. It kind of makes sense when you're using that much, when you're increasing your barrel program, that there's nothing stopping you having spirits and beers sitting right next to each other.
Why buy barrels off distilleries when you can be your own distillery and buy the barrel, use it for that, and then reuse it?
So Hippocampus owns part of Boat Rocker, or the other way around?
I think now
previously they owned part of Boat Rocker, but it's now being called Boat Rocker.
Yeah. Boat Rocker Brewers and Distilleries. I think Boat Rocker is the stronger brand.
But like, so what was the reason behind Hippocampus moving rather than Boat Rocker moving? Like,
I think because Boat Rocker is the stronger brand with the more kind of the larger presence in the market.
Is it fair to say it's easier to move a distillery than it is to move a brewery?
Yes, probably.
Yeah, maybe that.
And also probably with the location, they're closer to
Melbourne rather than Hippocampus are in Perth. I think they were fairly close to the city of Perth, but I think
Melbourne might be a more strategic
area. I think that's the main.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So we'll have a
we should thank our sponsor, Dave's Travel and Events Group. So Dave's Travel and Events Group offers a few different awesome kind of services for beer nerds focused around Sydney. Dave's Brewery Tours, which is awesome.
They're also in Canberra and the Hunter region now, and Newcastle.
Dave's Pub Walks is another one, so that's based mostly around the Rocks.
They do Pub Walks in the Rocks,
Balmain, and the city. Yep.
And they'll be launching, they're actually doing a CD tour for Sydney Beer Week, which will be the launch of that one, which will be
nice.
Product coming forward.
Yeah.
I've done the Balmain tour myself. It's actually really cool.
Yeah.
So it's very much like the CD underbelly of those areas. So it's not just and here's the Opera House and here's this. It's sort of about...
Yeah.
The story is a bit of a sex and gore tour.
Sounds cool. I like
it's actually really fun. Yeah. Really enjoyed it. And it's like, as a person who's lived in Sydney born in Sydney, lived in Sydney for most of my life, I learned a lot. It was actually really cool. So awesome. And that's a great thing. A bit more of a touristy thing, I think you could say. But I find these days, it's only when I have people from out of town that I go to the areas like the Rocks and stuff like that. Yeah. You take that as areas for advantage.
I know. It's
you go over there. It's beautiful. It's really cool.
Beautiful historic part of town. Yeah.
Spent a bit of time in Endeavour the last couple of weeks. So they go, I think.
And you get to, you get to drink a whole bunch of beers during the walk as well, right?
Yeah, there's about 4 or 5 stops on the walk and you have beers at all of them. But I think you can have either beer or wine or cider on the walk tours.
Yeah.
But it's a really, really cool.
And that's like that's the awesome thing about Dave's Travel and Events Group, is because they offer these kind of more, I guess, mainstream classic walking tours with a beer twist. But you can also go on a Dave's Brewery tour where you kind of see a unique part of Sydney rather than
so you can go to the rather than the
classic
or,
you know, yeah, yeah rather yeah. than the classic kind of touristy things. You can see the local beer industry and what they're doing. Yeah,
and I think all of them are tours that are not just for people from out of town. Like, how often? When's the last time you guys went to visit all the breweries?
Yeah, exactly.
And all the beaches?
Yeah,
exactly. It's so hard to do.
Canberra,
it's so hard to
was
get up.
Like,
there.
I think Canberra is such an exciting thing. What's going over there at the moment? So
yeah, I mean Hunter Valley is really exciting because I haven't been to most of those breweries.
Yeah,
I've been to like one maybe. So yeah, I'd be keen to check out those places.
And then the final kind of part of Dave's is Dave's Events.
Which is sort of really what I do. Yeah. So that's my main gig.
And I think the most exciting part of that for our listeners and for us is Dave's Events puts on Sydney Beer Week.
This is our first year of doing Sydney Beer Week. Actually, Sydney Beer Week's going to be awesome. So it's going to be 20th to 29th of October this year. We're just at the stage where we've been going through all the events and improving. So in the next week, all the venues are going to get notification of who's been approved and who's not.
Yep.
Really stoked with the program this year. There's some serious cool stuff going on.
So if any of that sounds exciting to you, and it should, go to daves.com.au. There's links.
Fancy new website.
That's nice. And you can find information on all those different products and services.
And a big shout out to Dave and everyone else at the team at Dave's for not only supporting us, but just supporting the industry.
That's the final part. Dave's doesn't just support Sessional, and he's not doing this to line his pockets. He's doing this to support the industry and to support us in doing that.
So big cheers to Dave and the crew.
Yeah.
Sessionable. And we're back.
We are back. Yep.
What are we drinking now?
This is... I haven't brought a Wayward beer for a while, so...
Yeah, you work for Wayward, right?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Is he allowed to bring Wayward beers?
We haven't nixed it, so...
Yeah.
And by the time this episode comes out, we will have launched Long Necks. And this is one of them.
Sweet.
So this is the Midnight Barley Cowboy, which is long being a mainstay in our range.
Awesome.
And it's a hoppy porter, bit of smoke. I think we've had it on the podcast before.
So tell
us about the Long Neck series. Is it all your kind of semi-limited releases?
Yeah, so it's Midnight Barley Cowboy, it's Dad Rock Double IPA,
yep,
Otis Oatmeal IPA, and Fat Charmer.
Yes!
In Long Necks.
That's a good beer.
I got a massive bloop from the audio. Sorry. There. Everyone getting really excited about Fat Charmer.
So that means you can get Dad Rocked at home now.
I was going to say, is Dad Rock the gluten-reduced version?
Yes, it will be.
Ooh.
It's always been gluten-reduced, hasn't it?
Not always.
Only recently, right?
Since we started gluten-reducing it, we've always been.
From batch two, I think, yeah.
Because I have a gluten-intolerant friend, and he would love that.
So it's gluten-reduced in the same way that the Stone is at the Ghost?
Yes, correct. It's not gluten-free. We brew it as normal.
It's not technically gluten-free because...
It uses a fining product.
It starts with using gluten products rather than using gluten-free products.
And then I believe the enzyme breaks down the gluten chain, so it's no longer gluten. But
interesting thing, that actually was not designed to make it gluten-reduced. It's designed as a clarification.
Yeah, and
that's what you use it for, right?
We do use it to make it gluten reduced, but it also works for clarification. Yeah.
How's the bottling gone, Tom, for Wayward in terms of footprint and distribution?
It's been fantastic. It's kind of it's been interesting going to places. A lot of people are expecting cans, not bottles.
Yeah,
but we've made the decision to go bottles, and it is really helping Wayward kind of get to places they weren't before.
Interesting for me, it's like a 17-minute walk home for the brewery, and just a stubby just doesn't quite cut it. So,
so now you can have a long neck of Fat Charmer instead.
Or Otis.
Or Otis.
Or Midnight. Mm-hmm. Night Valley Cowboy,
Just one last piece of local news before we get on to recommendations. I think we missed this in the last episode because I think it was announced before the last episode was recorded, but Colonial is now the... beer and cider partner of the Essendon Football Club in the AFL,
Which is interesting. I'm a bit worried that what Colonial are putting in their beers now, but
it's not performance enhancing because they're not in the top eight. So
is this enough for you to change allegiance, Adrian, from Hawthorn?
Absolutely not.
No.
It's all about the Persian ways.
Not even close, yeah.
Is Essendon's home ground MCG? Or
it's Etihad. And supposedly it's available at every home game and every event that they do. But I heard that it was only available at like the kind of members areas and not the whole stadium, which is kind of shit. But like it's progress.
But the North Melbourne Brewery is the official clubhouse, I think, of the club now. So it's where you go to preload before the game.
Yes. Oh, okay. So the Port Melbourne Brewery.
That's really interesting.
So I think like their official kind of fan events they do there.
Yeah.
It's a good. I mean, it's a great event spot. So that's really cool. And it's really cool to see. We've spoken about craft beer getting into sports venues and stuff before, and this is kind
not
of
the
a,
answer, but the step in the right direction.
It's a step in the right direction. Exactly.
I mean, especially like you know. Brewery stadiums insisting on serving mid strength only. They have a perfect mid strength for that Colonial Small Ale. So hopefully it is a step in the right direction. Hopefully it's not like just a.
I think it's interesting because the AFL actually owns Etihad Stadium. It's not.
They do now.
Now they bought it this year.
Yeah.
And I think this wouldn't have been able to happen if that wasn't the case, because stadiums have big contracts and they. You know,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So it'd be interesting to see if Etihad does more of similar kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I know the AFL was talking about using Etihad as a esports arena and hosting esports competitions there.
What, like World of Warcraft?
Yeah, well,
I think
like
it's a bit too
League
big
of
for
Legends
that.
And
like there is like a following in Australia, but I think
it'll be interesting. I'm less beer related, but I'm just interested to see what
about
they do with
drone
it.
Racing? Can they do drone racing?
Oh, I want to watch some drone racing.
That'd be so good because you can put like the camera on the big screens from like from the drone's perspective. It'd be heaps of fun. So we might start wrapping up and get to recommendations.
Recommendations.
Adrian, you've got one.
I do. I'll start with Numbeer. I started watching American Gods, which is
a new
American TV series based on the Neil Gaiman novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also available legitimately in Australia.
On Amazon Prime
through
Video.
Through Prime Video.
Is that a thing here?
Yeah,
it is now. Which is like I even looked it up the other day and I couldn't find it.
You can go to search Prime Video on Google and it'll take that pretty much the first link. It's, I think, $4 a month for the first 6 months as a trial.
That's pretty good.
Which is pretty good.
It's another Netflix or something.
It's another Netflix. Their selection isn't as good as Netflix or Stan. Yeah. But I think, like, just to get people in, they have, like, a free trial plus the reduced price for the first 6 months.
And you do get to watch Clarkson, Hammond and May as well.
Yeah, they do have the Grand Tour.
The Grand Tour, yeah. And, yeah, so American Gods is outside of America exclusive to Prime Video, which is really cool.
Awesome.
And I love that book. So and they've been doing a really good job of adapting.
Yeah, it's only, as recording, we're only two episodes in.
Yes.
But it has been really
It has
good.
Been really good. Cool. I was skeptical, and then I watched the first episode, and I'm like, I'm sold.
Awesome. Anyone else?
I'll go.
Yeah,
I've got a couple
That's
of
a good idea.
I've got a couple of TV recommendations.
Awesome.
One is a beery TV recommendation.
Oh,
the other one is
always good.
My beery TV recommendation is produced by Viceland, and it's called Beerland, and it's actually the founder of Golden Road Brewing in the US. Mm. I can't remember her first name. Second name is Gil. Founder of Golden Road Brewing. And what she's doing is she's going around the US states, finding the hottest homebrewers in each state and kind of going around to each of their setups, trying all their beers, getting a winner from each state, and it's all going to culminate at the end of the season.
Stealing their recipes.
And the winner gets to brew a big batch at Golden Road. So,
they are stealing their recipes.
It's an interesting series.
Is that on appearance yet?
He hasn't yet.
Damn it!
Yeah, I don't know if they've been there. They went to New Mexico. They've been to Northern California. I can't remember the third place.
Where'd they go in New York? Northern California?
I don't know. But
so
yeah. Look it out. I think it might be available on SBS Viceland.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
But if not, you can get it on YouTube or there are other ways.
Awesome.
My second recommendation from the TV is a UK series called Taskmaster. It's a comedy show and it's presented by Greg Davis, who you may know as the head teacher from In Between Us.
Yes, okay, yeah,
he's awesome. Yeah, yeah,
he's great. He's one of my favorite comics. And anyway, the series is basically they get five different UK comics. The series is presented by Greg Davis, and they get them to perform all of these ridiculous tasks, and they kind of score them based on best to worst. And the idea is that they get this ridiculous task given to them, and they have to find the most inventive ways of getting around the obvious hurdles. So the tasks are stuff like fill an egg cup with people's tears. conceal a pineapple on your person. Paint a picture of a horse while riding a horse. And draw a caricature of somebody you can't see who's behind a curtain. So
it sounds amazing.
It's really funny. It's really good. And the way that they do it, and you know what Greg Davis is like, he's really condescending in the way that he presents it as well. So look that up. That's actually on UK TV on Foxtel on Sunday nights at 8:30.
Okay,
cool. Awesome.
Yeah, so give that a look. It's really funny.
I'm also going to chuck a TV one in there because I've just started rewatching Arrested Development on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
One of my favorite series of all time.
You know what? I've only ever seen the first season of that.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. First is the best, but like the rest is
but then good. The running jokes just
It's all about the running jokes in that show. It's so good.
They pile up and it's very good.
Did you ever see the new one where they came back and made a
how was the new season?
It's actually really good.
Yeah.
I think they're doing a movie, but if you've never seen it, awesome comedy about a very dysfunctional family, which sounds very like almost like every other comedy, but very sharply written. It's something I've seen over quite a few times, but I just found it on Netflix the other day, so I started rewatching the first season. So definitely recommended it.
I will check that out. I've not seen it, so I'm going to check that out.
Tom. Okay, mine is also TV, because I just went through and I realized I haven't recommended this, even though it's been consuming my life recently. And it is the latest series of Survivor.
Mm.
So series 34, Game Changers.
Yeah, I back this.
Yeah. Also combined with it is a podcast called Rob Has a Podcast, which is hosted by Rob Cesenino, who's a former Survivor contestant. And he interviews all the players as they get voted off. So you hear them talking about that episode when they're getting voted off and their thought process. And it's it's coming to the end of the series. By the time this comes out, I think the finale will be just around the corner. And it's been awesome. I used to love Survivor when it first was on, and I kind of have stopped watching. And then this is the series that's gotten me back into it. It's fantastic.
It's very good.
It's a good show. It's a very good show.
Cool. Last few seasons have been fucking on point.
I think that's the first time there's been a reality TV recommendation on the pod. So
quite possibly.
We've broken a wall.
Yeah, quite possibly. On to beer recommendations. I am going to recommend the Mornington Peninsula Brewery Jiffy Squid, which is the New England IPA.
Yeah.
Which is like...
Jump on the bandwagon. Let's go.
I mean, we can debate about what a New England IPA is, and it's not the best example of the style going by American styles that I've ever had, but discounting all that, it is a fucking tasty beer, and I've had liters of it.
I mean, it is highly dry hopped, big on hop flavor and aroma, low on bitterness, which is to style for a New England, but it's not hazy.
I didn't think it was super juicy, but
I found it pretty juicy.
It is very low in bitterness. It is very very citrusy, hoppy on the nose, and those two things it takes very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no Treehouse, but Australian brewers have just started brewing this style this year,
exactly.
So you know, we'll get there. Regardless of that, this is a very fucking good IPA.
It is very good.
So yeah, I recommend that.
Done.
Yeah. Cool. My beer recommendation, I'm going to cheat a little bit, is the Gabs six pack from from Dan Murphy's. The beers featured in the Gabs six
pack. Did Tom pay you to do that?
This year are the Wayward Funky Hoppy People.
I didn't, but it's...
Hoppy Sour Beer. There's a colonial beer horrifically named Ryan Gosling.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I cringe every time I hear that.
There's another sour, Eight Wired Cosmic Chaos, which is a sour black IPA.
Nice.
So three of the six beers are actually sour beers. In addition to that, there's the Yeasty Boys Royal Tannenbaum, which is the kind of Gunner Matter squared. Yeah.
I think that was named by our producer.
Yeah, it's the Liebate.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that'll be why I don't get it then. Yeah. Okay, all right.
Oh, you won't drink it.
It's Royal Tannenbaum. There's lots of tannins. It's a movie pun, don't worry.
Yeah, all right.
It's a movie pun.
Is that the first Yeasty Boys beer that's not a music reference?
Maybe.
Don't know.
Anyway.
The other two are Chur Chocolate Fish Milk Stout, and there's a very interesting sound in Blackman's Espresso Martini Kolsch, which I'm not sure what to expect.
Okay.
But that's a really eclectic, interesting six-pack. I'm really pleased personally that three of the beers are sour. So
is it two New Zealand beers as well?
Two New Zealand beers
and three sour beers.
Three New Zealand beers.
Chur, Eight Wired, and Yeasty Boys.
That's interesting. So they went...
Two Victoria and one New South Wales.
That's
cool. So that sounds like a hell of a six pack, certainly for someone like me who's not actually going to the festival.
Yeah, awesome. I got one.
Mine was a reacquainted love. Grifters rebrewed their Demon Lungs, which is their smoked porter.
Oh, ooh. I've never had that one.
Yeah. Neither have I. Yeah.
So, another awesome venue or brewery that I love to visit. I was in there last week and they had the Demon Lungs back on tap, which made me very happy.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Sick.
And mine is also a Mornington Peninsula beer.
You're going to go to the Brain Squeeze.
I'm going to go to the Brain Squeeze.
I was thinking about that as well.
You guys have been paid off, right?
I'm loving that beer so much, Brain Squeeze. It's just, it's awesome.
I don't mind it. I think I like the label of the cans more.
It's so cool.
The actual beer.
I'm really excited to get it in cans as well. Yeah. I'll probably have a six pack in my fridge.
They got some around the corner. I might have to go and get some now.
Awesome.
Yeah, I know there's some around the corner.
It is definitely around the corner.
Yeah.
Alrighty, guys. Let's call it an episode.
Yeah.
Good up, guys.
Once again, thanks to Dave's Travel and Events Group for sponsoring the show.
And just for being good people.
They do own and operate Sydney Beer Week. And
we do.
It's coming up soon.
Program will be out in a couple of months.
Yeah. So the program is out in what, June or July?
Yeah, July.
July. Awesome. So look out for that. And look out for Sydney Beer Week in October.
20th to 29th. Put it in your diaries now. Get your annual leave requests in right now because you're going to need it.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to be working the entire week, but you know.
Yeah, but that is the lot of us who work in the craft beer industry.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, and like I said, I've seen all the events being registered. Yeah.
You're Mr.
Yeah.
I was going to say you're Mr. Sydney Beer Week, but not facetiously. Like, you actually are. I'm
the general manager. Yeah,
exactly.
You are actually now Mr. Sydney Beer Week.
Yeah.
Do you have to get a new sash now that doesn't say craft on it?
No, I'm pushing more for a lifetime achievement award. Okay, that's me. But yeah,
can you get it like a crown?
Yeah. I wanted the beer personality award to be called the Pereira Award.
The Liam Pereira Award for best beer personality.
Yeah. That's the one. That's when you know you've made it.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, thanks for listening, and go to daves.com.au for more info on Dave's.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
Catch you next time.
Cheers. Bye.